Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus, and Blake Murphy. It's Text Line Tuesday, so keep your questions, your comments, everything coming at 590-590. We'll take those throughout the show. But right now, we're joined by Barry Melrose, former NHL head coach and current ESPN analyst. Good morning, Barry. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning to you. Everyone's having a great morning, I hope, up there in Canada.
Yeah, we sure are. We're staying as warm as possible here in lockdown. But yeah, we're really glad to have you. We got some questions about the player, the coaching side of things. We'll start with the Leafs. You know, I'm sure you've seen Sheldon Keefe making some changes, making some headlines with his call-outs in terms of the team being soft and purposeless. We'll start with the line. So he's switched some things up. He's got about three kind of evenly distributed lines. Why do you think he decided to do that now?
Trying to get a winning lineup, trying anything. That's a coach's job. And when things aren't working, you make changes. When things aren't working, you try different things, whether put all your eggs in one basket, which we've seen Toronto do, put their best lineup in the top six, spread them out over four, which we've seen Toronto do. Toronto's got that amount of skill that those lines that they do that with should be still good NHL lines. Ice time is a motivating factor, you know, so you're playing different guys with different guys in order to get them fired up and get this team moving, because this is one of the elite teams in the NHL, and they're not elite right now by any stretch of the imagination. You know, you look at Colorado, struggled at the start a little bit. They've got their game back together, and they're one of the best teams in the NHL right now, and you know, Toronto is not. So I think it's just a coach trying to do anything it takes to win. And whether, you know, some people say, well, changing the lines is not a good thing. Well, you can't just keep throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks. You got to, you know, you've got a group of players, a group of talented players, and, you know, you got to find out, you know, which guy plays with which guy. Maybe there's a little magic there. As a coach, you're always looking for some magic in your lines, and maybe that's what Sheldon's doing right now, looking for a little magic. But you, as a coach, you don't want to be doing that in January. That's something that you do in October. You know, so you don't like to be shaking up lines and making changes now, but sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to give guys a wake-up call.
So, Barry, let's say this works and these lines click for a couple games here. The Leafs also had that really strong run earlier in the year where a different set of lines clicks. You as a coach, would you be more comfortable heading into the playoffs with three pretty well-balanced lines? You know, you can just roll out there, bang, bang, bang. Or, you know, one pretty loaded line at the top that, you know is going to win their minutes. Like if you get to choose, would you rather have that balance or one really, really good line that can try to swing a minute at a time for you? Which way would you lean?
I would love to have three lines that can play. I think if you look at the teams that have been winning Stanley Cups, they're pretty deep. Their fourth line has got them points, got them goals. You know, you look at the Islanders last year, which was one of the, you know, four best teams in the NHL. They were great. All four lines were tough to play against for scoring goals. Being good defensively, so I think any coach would love to have that, have the four lines going that you can play, that you have faith in playing. Obviously, one of those lines is going to be a power play line, but it's nice to have that depth on the bench. When you're looking down the bench, you know, it's a lonely position when you're looking at three eyes. It's nice to look at nine or 12 eyes. So I think that any coach would like to have more good. You know, one super is great, but we haven't seen, NHL teams of late winning games that are, without a little bit of depth. Even the Tampa Bay Lightning have a lot of depth, and you look at the goals last year by Tampa Bay, it was a lot of the third, fourth line guys scored a lot of big goals for Tampa Bay.
So kind of back to the Keefe discussion in terms of what he's kind of put out in the media. What's it like to be on both sides of that? A player where you're listening and your coach kind of gives that bullet of, hey, our team needs to improve, you know, calls them out, in a, and especially in a media market like Toronto, where we catch on to those things and we talk about it for 3 or 4 days. And what's it like to be the coach who is calling them out, and what are you looking for in terms of that response?
Well, you're looking for a response, and you're looking for the right response, and you're looking for a push from your team, a wake-up call. As a coach, you know your people pretty well. You know what you can do and what you can't do, and which guys can take it and which guys, you know, you have to pull into the room and do things a little quieter. But you're looking to get guys going. You're looking to get guys fired up. As a coach, I never cared if they were mad at me, but just get mad at somebody, okay? So let's get this team ready, and let's get this team rocking and rolling again. And the players have to accept this responsibility. Players get paid a lot of money. They live in a great country. They make a ton of money. And they got to respect that you're not going to accept mediocre play. And I would say that Toronto is a team right now that's not giving them what they envisioned when they put this team together. But as a coach, you have to know which guys can be pushed. With some guys shrink away and you lose them, some guys you go in and bark at them, oh, they're a different player. So you got to know that as a coach, and you got to get them ready. That's what a coach's job is, motivate. Sometimes you're a psychiatrist. Sometimes you need to be a psychiatrist. Sometimes you need a psychiatrist. So there's a lot of stuff happening in that dressing room. But a coach's job is to get a good team to play as long as possible, or get a good team that's not playing well, get that team playing well. So a coach, you know, has to have a lot of different hats on.
We're speaking to Barry Melrose, former NHL head coach, current ESPN analyst. Barry, I know you said that it's a little bit of a feeling out process. You got to see who's going to respond well to the public comments, who's going to respond, you know, who needs the carrot, who needs the stick, that kind of stuff. Was there ever an instance where you said something publicly about a player and you regretted it after the fact? Like, I guess what I'm asking is, do you have to learn that on the fly and take those risks?
If you're a young coach coming up, you're coaching the same way in junior. I coach in junior. I love coaching in junior, but you're doing the same things in junior as you're doing when you get to the NHL. Your players just aren't making the money. They're still elite players, and they're still elite athletes, and some of them are going to make a lot of money someday. But yeah, your job is to learn those things, and you're doing it on the fly. There's no school of coaching that you go to. I'm coaching in Western Canada League. I'm coaching in the American League, and then you finally get your chance in the NHL. But there's no book that tells you what to do at that moment. You got to feel it out, and you got to get to know your guys. And hopefully, when you get to know your guys, you're a good judge of character and a good judge of talent, and you know what they take and what they can't take, and what will push the players on the right track of things. Any good coach is a guy that can do that. Any good coach knows, what buttons to push and what strings to pull. If you're good at that, you're going to be coaching for a pretty long time.
Yeah, and I think for the most part in the regular season, Keith specifically has been pretty great at pushing those buttons at the right time. The question is going to be, come playoff time, whether these things pan out, whether these work out, right? Like everything that's been discussed so far, it's, hey, you're line juggling and trying to find that magic that you talked about. Will you be able to replicate that come postseason? Will you be able to have different players who can lean on each other in the right spots? Are you going to motivate guys properly at the right times? And are those times in a regular season when you're in January and you're calling your team soft and purposeless, you know, are those the right buttons to do? Are you going to aggravate your team, or are you going to motivate your team? Again, for the most part, I think Keith has been great. What I'm really interested to talk to you about as well, Barry, is just you cover this game south of the border, and I don't know. We don't get as much because we're not watching this on television the same way. but it doesn't feel as contentious. And I wonder sometimes if you look at what we're doing, like you see what's happening with the Edmonton Oilers right now, where players are getting called pissy and there's just real back and forth between media members and the players. Or here in Toronto, where the team is going extremely well this regular season from a point standpoint, but the second they start to drop a couple of games, you end up with really splashy headlines from coaches that turn into multiple days of coverage of just how, you know, just you being a national NHL observer, how you look at this game and the way that it's covered differently between the two countries.
Well, I coach in Los Angeles, and yep. You know, apart from New York, that's the biggest market in the United States. So I coach in a big market with a lot of press, but and with Gretzky on the team. So, you know, there's not much as far as coaching a superstar that I haven't seen. But you got to it's not the same whatsoever. Toronto gets a lot of ink. Edmonton, obviously, when Gretzky was there and stuff. But it's not the same right now. It's not the markets are different. The Edmonton thing with Draisaitl and McDavid and those guys, and Draisaitl talking to the press the other night and said pissy, and so it was. It's funny, but it's not. And working for ESPN, we have the package now, so it's number one on in the United States now for hockey. So that's made a big difference, but not nearly like Toronto gets or Montreal gets when they're in a playoff rush. So what's so great about the United States and with hockey is that you get paid a ton of money if you're a player, and you don't really have the same pressure on you in the NHL side of things at ESPN than you do in other areas. So it's a lot easier to be a player or a coach in the United States than it is in Canada, and you're right, the coverage is so intense in the United States or in Canada. One of Bruce Boudreau's lines was, I always wanted to coach in Canada. So careful what you wish for, Bruce. You might just get it. So it's an entirely different animal as far as coaching and playing in these two markets.
Yeah, except for he's loving it. They have Bruce where it is chants going on. Like, he's a savior in Vancouver. Careful what you wish for. He got the perfect wish. It's working out. It's like he couldn't have done anything better than this. Everybody loves him in Vancouver now.
Well, Bruce is one of my best friends. Groy, or played in the NHL. We both played in Toronto and became good friends. But he's this is what players like about him. They're getting that bump. He comes in there. No pressure on him for the whole year. Basically, he's got a free ride. He can get to know the guys. He doesn't have to come in and kick someone's butt right off the bat. He's got a great personality. The press love him. He's always got a good line. But then Bruce doing that is bad for other coaches trying to get a job, because a lot of them expect that Boudreau bump. Yeah. And if you don't get the Boudreau bump where you win 9 games or 10 games in a row, well then you're not doing a good job as a coach.
He's a great guy. We had him on once, and then he signed with the Canucks, so maybe we helped get that little Boudreau bump.
Speaking of Boudreau bumps, like, we gave him the bump himself.
we'll get your perspective on a little bit more U.S. based stuff, because you cover the whole league, you got what's going on south of the border. When we look at where the Leafs are in the Atlantic, there's that kind of that the top three, the Tampa, the Florida, the Leafs, and I guess my question to you is Tampa still the team to beat in the Atlantic, and if so, how far is Toronto and Florida, and are they close to closing the gap?
Well, Florida's low. Yeah, I think Tampa's still the team to beat. Why wouldn't they be? They've basically got the same team. They have to add a couple guys because they lost some guys to free agency because they played so well. But they'll be trying to add some players to their lineup also. No one's beat this team yet for 2 years, and they won 2 Stanley Cups in a row. And if you can do it twice in a row, why can't you do it 3 times in a row? So I believe in this team. I believe in this character. Best goaltender in the NHL, best defenseman in the NHL, Victor Hedman. A group, great forwards. You talk about depth. You know, are they, which 12 players are they going to play tonight type deal. So anyone that puts on the Tampa Lights or uniform becomes a better player right off the bat. So, but I think the one team I think is dangerous for them is Florida, because Florida gave them the best run last year and could easily won that series. And they're playing really well right now. They've got depth. They've got Bobrovsky playing well. So they got a veteran goaltender that can match Tampa Bay. Their forward defense is very good. Their forwards are awesome. So Florida is the one team that I think could give Tampa Bay a good run. I think that'd be a heck of a series.
Oh, we're looking forward to seeing how it all shakes out. We'll definitely have you down the road to give us an update on everything. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Barry.
Barry Melrose, former NHL head coach, current ESPN analyst.
It is so weird still that we basically have no handle on how the Leafs are going to match up against most of these teams come regular season time. Mm-hmm. Like the way that the schedule is stacked, where it's just everything later. Like, remember there was, I think I was actually off the show. I can't remember what I was doing. I think I was down in the States when the Leafs mm-hmm. played the Bruins and they had that big Bruins win. That's a million years ago. That's like the they've got this one Bruins game, right? Where we go, mm-hmm. they hang their hat on it. It was a real turning point of the season from, hey, things started really slowly and poorly, the team's getting hot, and now they have this quality win against the Bruins. And we're still really waiting for what is going to essentially end up feeling more, I think, like a playoff series against Florida, where all those games are later in the year. All these teams that Toronto has to measure themselves against are coming when the schedule gets tougher. So I wonder how we react to those games as fans and media, because they're going to be regular season, but also it's going to be the best test of the year, and it's going to be as we get closer to the games that actually matter.
It's similar to the stretch the Raptors are in right now, right? Where it's like, mm-hmm. hey, any eight games out of the chunk of schedule only mean eight games, but mm-hmm. these are the teams you should be measuring yourself against, and you're at a point in the season, you know, for the Raptors right now where you have to figure out who you are and what direction you're going. And for the Leafs, it's more of a, hey, you're trying to find out, are you where you're supposed to be by now? Which is, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking March 27th. That segment of the season kicks off. You could stretch it a little earlier than that because they play Carolina like 10 days before that too. But really, it's Florida, Boston, Tampa, Florida, and then another Florida game. Like you are in another Tampa game. You're basically just playing potential playoff opponents. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think on the one hand, it's a pretty good thing to have because you've got the entire last month of the season that is basically playoff caliber tune-up games, but there's, you know, they've got that compressed February coming up, and then it chills for a little bit, and then there's a trade deadline. But you better look and feel like you're there by March 27th when that part of the schedule picks up.
Speaking of schedule, maybe you want to schedule this into your summer. Do you want to go see Zach Brown Band this summer? Well, we're giving away tickets all week long, and right now we're taking caller number 5 to see Zach Brown Band at Budweiser Stage on June 3rd. So get your phones ready, 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or *590. We'll be giving away tickets every single day this week. Call in right now. Caller number 5. We'll get to go to Zach Brown Band on Friday, June 3rd at Budweiser Stage. Just picture yourself. It's summertime. It's warm. You got a beer in your hand. You're listening to live country music. That could be you if you call in right now. Yesterday, Dirk won. What a guy. Country name that I've ever heard of is Dirk. Not Dirk Bentley, but a caller named Dirk. So call in right now and you could win.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, it would be fun. And it's Text Line Tuesday, so you can also text in and, you know, tell us how you're what you're thinking, what about the Leafs lines, how you're feeling, where the Raptors go on the stretch, how you're feeling about our wake and rake. Sorry about that. Last night was a bit of a tough one. We're taking texts all day, 590, 590, so keep those coming as well. And we'll take a break now. We'll take an early break so we can get into our wake and rake and hopefully win you guys some money so you can not be upset that we lost last night. We had a little bit of a tough one, but that's it. We gave it a little disclaimer before we did the bets yesterday that yesterday was a tough one. So we're ready to bounce back today with the wake and rake. That's after the break. It's Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Kalish Forfar. You might say I'm out of aces. After a very hot run, I've lost 2 out of 3 in our wake and rake. First time all
it happens.
Wake and rake existence that it doesn't happen to me, Kalish. It's the first time since we introduced that segment back in December. I got to stay away from college basketball. So last night it was I was on Florida. They were out their top center, Colin Castleton, and the game went to script. They still managed to handle the interior well, handle the rebounding well, and shot 4 of 29 on three-pointers and got run off the court. When you lose your interior center who doesn't shoot threes, you don't really expect that three-point shooting is going to be the issue, but 4 of 29. So I trapdoored us. Last night, Kalish, you also lost. But
wow,
did I ever lose?
I lost,
so it doesn't
dramatic fashion. Like it was the blowout of the century. It was just disgusting, and I was like, "Oh yeah, they're gonna win! What a team! Calgary sucks!" Wow, did I ever get owned? So you know what? Yeah. It happens. I got humbled last night, big time.
An old JD coming through with the W with no sweat at all. Wild minus 1.5.
No, I also liked crazy, the Bulls and the Thunder, and that ended up being another non-sweat. I believe my Pelicans also came through. I think I gave away 3 wins yesterday.
Those were sweats, though. I know you were like not like looking as much, but all those games came down to the wire last night.
Nah. The Bulls game came down to the wire?
The what game?
The Bulls?
They won by a point.
Wow, that's shocking, because I thought that I saw at one point they were up by, I think, 20 points.
Yeah, they almost
and I didn't even – if that would have actually lost last night and been the reason why my parlay didn't hit, not the two of you, I would have been devastated, because I would have woken up this morning. That's happened to me in the past. I don't know if that's ever happened to you guys, where you actually have such a big lead in a bet you have that you just cruise, you go to sleep. It happened to me this summer at the Olympics. Or whenever the Olympics were, I don't know when anything happened during the pandemic anymore.
Like, it was just the summer,
like,
you're right.
It's like, when did things happen? I have no clue. But there was, I think it was Medvedev in tennis, where he was the last leg of a parlay, and he won the first, he won his first set against an opponent that he was already like a minus 500 favorite against. And I don't know why I do this to myself. I don't know why I throw these tennis guys in there like they're locks sometimes. And I went to bed and I woke up with Medvedev, tired out, choked, fell apart, no cardio, blah, blah, blah. And he blew it. He blew it. And I was apoplectic. I was devastated. It destroyed a massive, massive, massive parlay for me. So that would have been the same thing with the Bulls. I usually don't sleep, but I'll go to sleep when I feel like it's that comfortable.
Speaking of tennis, quick, did you guys see Schapo push it to 5 sets against Nadal last night? Just barely lost. Oh,
what's crazy about that?
Good vibes for him.
Schapo started the tournament playing pretty erratically and poorly. And when he went into, I think it was his second round matchup, might have been his first, but either way, he was just like, I was talking to tennis people about it, texting with some people. And it was, hey, Schapo's being a bit of a head case. If you'll remember, I had one of my wake and rake picks or a down ballot wake and rake pick, because I usually end up giving away like 3 or 4 things that I'm gambling. But Schapo games over was one of them. And I said, because he's giving so many points away right now. And then he just leveled out immediately after. He played great. He was a dog in his last matchup, won. He faced Nadal last night and really pushed him to the limit. I just think that, yeah, great tournament for the kid. Great tournament for the Canadian men. Because
he did
Felix,
have a little – sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it. Felix, too. I was just going to say
he's Felix also is crushing it, too.
Yeah.
He did have a little bit of a moment last night, Schapo. He was yelling at the
– that's who he is.
He was a bit upset because Nadal was taking his time, and he got a little bit upset with the calls, but ultimately lost and at the end there. I saw a lot of people stayed up real late to watch it, so good for them. I was not one of them.
I've been throwing it on late at night. Like, it's actually, I gotta tell you, this has been the best tournament for me watching tennis. And I know that sounds counterintuitive given the time that we wake up in the morning, but it's so nice to just throw it on and have something to gamble on as I'm doing late night show prep stuff and working on the last couple of, you know, kinks on the show where I'm going, okay, this is my last interview prep, this is my last thing. When tennis is across from, no offense, real sports, I'll never watch tennis. Like, it's just not a, it's not a thing. I'll watch it if, you know, Bianca goes into a finals. I'll watch it for Layla when she's going to finals. I'm now going to watch every bit of Felix, right? Like, Felix is now in the zone where you go, okay, you're must-see TV for me. But usually I don't watch unless it's a Canadian that gets into a semifinals. Even a quarterfinals is, like, too far.
I'm sweating a Gabe Monfils bet right now, so
yes,
I don't blame you. And I can't watch it because obviously we're on the show, so I'm an idiot. Speaking of me being an idiot, so with that loss last night, we go 1-2 on the night. Little subplot here that I'm hesitant to bring up, but I'm going to do it because it's entertaining to me as someone who is, you know, part of the team, but not part of this wrinkle. Ailish and JD, you guys have now pulled basically even in your success rates in the old Wake and Rake. Ailish has done one fewer because she had an extra day off. But you are otherwise right in the same spot there, so no pressure.
No, you know what I hate about this? This is, again, I've called you a bad guy before on the show.
I know.
And it's like you are a bad gambling guy, and this is another example of Blake being a bad guy. Blake has a horrific loss last night.
He's lost two of his last three. Lower everybody.
And immediately he turns to, hey, it's actually we're not a team anymore. This is now about Blake or JD versus Ailish and gambling.
No, wouldn't it
when
be
the
more
entire premise is about the team? There's no individual statistics here. All we've ever done is give out, hey, we're 66% as a show. You know, we win as a team, we lose as a team, and that's the way that it's supposed to be. And now you did the karmaic thing of the thing I'm watching is the two of you and the record. Bad guy, bad guy, bad guy, bad karma.
Right conclusion on the bad guy thing.
Yeah.
Poor logic, though, because if there were ever a time I was going to be like, no, it's a team thing, it would be in my first two out of three losing streak of the season.
Yes.
This would be the time I want to hammer the team element. I was just playing with the numbers and noticed this. So yes, bad guy, but that's not why.
Yeah.
So bad guy because I can't lay off some of this college basketball. It's been my worst part of the week. Right? I think I'm 1-2. Yeah, I think I'm 1-2 on college basketball picks in the Wake and Rake. So, speaking of NBA.
Raps.
We have the Toronto Raptors tonight. So, little injury background. Not a lot going on. Gordon Hayward's questionable. Ken Birch is out for the Raptors. That's about all you need to know on that side. The Charlotte Hornets are 3.5-point underdogs at the Toronto Raptors. Hornets come in with a better record, as we teed up earlier. They're almost identical in net rating. Raptors a little better defensively. Hornets a little better in terms of depth. And then if you control for quality of opponent, the Raptors come out looking a little better, but that's messy stuff in this season of all seasons. So let's start off the top with Hornets +3.5. That's +140 on the money line if you like them outright. Raptors only missing Ken Birch. JD, how you feeling when you hear that one initially?
I'm honest. I gotta play the honesty card here. I like the Hornets value. This is gonna be a no play for me in terms of the bet. But if this is a night where sometimes I like to pick the Raptors. You know, I picked the Raptors against the Wizards in the Wake and Rake the other night. I liked them in that spot. They came through and they won. This is just simply a game where I look at the two teams as very even. And the way that Charlotte has been playing lately, I don't think that they are sleeping on the Raptors in any way. They are a team that gets up for their opponents. They are a team that 100% plays up to teams and plays down to teams. And for a tough group like the Raps, who's right there with them in the standings, I'm anticipating that you're going to get a good punch from Charlotte tonight. What I am playing is Charlotte is not a good rebounding team. They're like one of the worst defensive rebounding teams in the NBA. It's a real weak spot for them. And so if you're looking for player props tonight, I would be looking at guys who crash the boards. I'd be looking for guys that are going to get on the offensive glass. That's where I do see Toronto having a big edge. Like Blake mentioned it earlier in the show, Toronto's the best offensive rebounding team in the league, and they're facing a team that I think is 25th in defensive rebounding percentage. So Toronto, I anticipate, will have moments in this game where they just smother them on that end, where they really kick the crap out of them there. But ultimately, I think Charlotte's talent is good enough where it's not a high confidence spot for me with the Raptors as short favorites. I just don't like the value tonight for them.
Yeah, definitely not a high confidence spot. To follow up on you saying the Hornets have been playing really well of late, 7-2 in their last nine,
yeah,
and 7-2 against the spread during that stretch as well. They're 29-18 against the spread this year, and this little 7-2 stretch has two wins against the Bucks, a win against the 76ers, and then Knicks and Celtics, yep, for more teams in their tier of the Eastern Conference. So they've beat a lot of teams similar to themselves and similar to the Raptors in terms of their place in the standings. For those rebounds, it's we don't have a ton up yet, but OG's at 5.5, Scottie's at 7.5. Those are the two.
I like OG over rebounds. He's been getting at least eight or nine rebounds over, or yeah, like averaging eight maybe over the last couple games. So over 5.5 seems good to me, but I think I'm doing more of a player prop night for sure. I don't know about betting the outcome.
OG would have hit the over 5.5 in four of his last five games. So, yeah. So you're right there, Ailish. And he's cleared it in those four games. He's cleared it without any question.
Mm-hmm.
So been possibly close. Possibly one there. Something to keep an eye on too is I've tended to like steals props with the Raptors, with how many they get. The Hornets are really tight with the ball. They don't turn it over a lot. So that's probably a spot where I'm not dabbling tonight. Mm-hmm. We don't have Hornets players props up yet. I think probably because the Gordon Hayward absence will swing some things. Is there anything else, JD? I know you've been hitting a couple different Raptors ones. Again, we only have the Raptors side of the line, but does anything stand out to you beyond the OG rebounds?
Well, I don't know if necessarily I'm going to play OGs. I do like the 5.5. I feel like, to me, this is actually where I really love Cool Bet's Bet Builder, because it's like I can tease some lines and end up taking down a couple of guys on rebounds. So I feel like this is one where maybe I'll drop OG to 4.5 rebounds. I'll drop Scottie Barnes to 5.5 rebounds, something along those lines. Although I do feel more confident in Scottie getting his against this team that I do again with OG. And I know that Scottie's been a little bit more up and down with his rebounding this month than in months past, but I still think that this is one of those you like those Raptors players to get at least, you know, 6-7 rebounds range. Just 7.5 is a little high for Scottie Barnes, I won't lie. Like, that's just for a guy that's averaging 6.5 this month to go up and say that, even against a poor rebounding team. It's just the tough one with the Raptors is just the distribution in terms of the rebounding they get, because they have so many guys who are good on the glass that you don't end up with a lot of consistency that is easy to peg. I will say that if I find a Chris Boucher prop tonight, I'm definitely going to play the Chris Boucher prop on the over on rebounds, because this is totally a Chris Boucher feast on the offensive glass game to me. Like, I feel like Chris Boucher double-double, you probably won't be able to find that on a book somewhere, but that would be one that I would guess you would get in the, like, plus 350, plus 400 range, and I'd love to play that tonight. So I feel like I'm giving a pick that isn't there, which is bad, but if you can find Chris Boucher, I would say tonight feels like a feasty Chris Boucher game. I don't know. I think that this is one where I'm not as confident playing Fred on his over on points lately. I think that he's lost a bit of his legs, and that Fred is the main, I don't want to say victim, but yeah, that he's the guy that has suffered the most from these added minutes. Like, I just don't see Fred looking as fresh. His number is 22.5 for points. I think that's a lot, considering he could face not only double teams, but a really big guard in Lonzo Ball defending him, which, if that is the case, we've seen Fred struggle with that in the past. So I'm not going to be playing his points total like I normally do. If anything, this is a night where I'm just going to go back to the Siakam well. I just think Siakam is completely in his bag right now. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do a guy where you're saying, hey, tease props, I'm taking him on his tees to assists. I'm taking him on his tees points. And then I'm probably even touching the tees rebounds because I think this is a Pascal game. I really do. I think this is a game where if it's a measuring stick opponent, then you're going to get the Raptors measuring stick player, and he's going to have to show out tonight. So I would anticipate a big Siakam night tonight.
So the Raptors game is one of nine NBA games tonight. We got a heavy slate, nine NBA games, eight NHL games, which is great because it means I have no excuse to go over to the college basketball books.
You're banned from college basketball for a while. Yeah,
college basketball. Oh, I'm 1-2 on college basketball. Yeah. Oh no!
Hey, listen, you're two. This is the problem with being so hot, Blake, is that you held it to a standard that you go like this, and like you're a sample size guy. We only have certain. It's like this is a chunk. You know, this is now. It's like that's a bad chunk with your overall, so we're just done with it. Like
I'm a sample size NBA guy, so that means I got to do 10 more college basketball games. Did any of that, none of that Raptor stuff's making your wake and rake pick though, right? Those are just
I would say that I'm, again, if I can find a Chris Boucher prop tonight, I like a Chris Boucher, and I'm definitely going to play a Siakam, probably a bet builder that includes him on points, rebounds, and assists. All tease down numbers, probably with some rebounding teases with those other two guys that play a ton. That is, like, it's all I'll say before we move off of this is just the Raptors play six guys a ton of minutes. And so really, like, the reason why I love them for bet builders and for teasing those numbers down is normally I don't like to tease props. I actually like to just leave props as is because you give up a ton of value for, you know, one rebound difference. But the Raptors are just a team where there's so much volume and minutes for their players that if you find like a halfway consistent pattern with their numbers, there's not going to be like massive deviations or variance with that from night in, night out. So they're just a fun team to do in the bet builder because you get a lot of opportunity. You just, like, I learned the lesson. You got to stay away from usually the, here I am advocating for Boucher when I'm like, the one thing you got to do is avoid the Precious and Boucher things because they fluctuate. But the other five guys, I like them a lot. Sorry. So, Ailish, where are you going tonight? You going to the NHL? I'm NBA.
No, I think the NHL, I'm not seeing like a lot of great value. There's some huge, heavy favorites. And then there's a lot of like coin toss games. And I obviously last night got embarrassed by my pick and it was a favorite. I'm going to skip over to basketball. I have a couple that I want to judge your confidence level by. First one that came to mind was, well, also I'm going to have to ask Blake for injury reports, but 76ers on the spread over the Pelicans. They're heavy. It's 8.5 point favorites, but I'm feeling confident about that one. That was the first one that stuck out to me, or this is a bit of a less confident pick, Lakers money line over the Nets. So I want to get your thoughts on those two. I saw Blake put his hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to give you the injury report. So first, in that 76ers-Pelicans game, Pelicans on the second night of a back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Brandon Ingram didn't play last night. He hasn't been ruled out for this one yet, but, you know, it didn't seem like he was close yesterday. He was ruled out very early. On the Philadelphia side, no Seth Curry, no Danny Green, no Shake Milton, and then Matisse Thybulle is questionable. Having said that, it's Joel Embiid, and we all love JV on the Pelican side, but Joel Embiid has been on fire of late, so that's how I'd set that one up. Lakers-Nets.
Well, I want to jump in on that game first because the Pelicans are a stay-away team for me right now. They're able to really play tough. It's just a team that I respect right now in terms of their ability to hang with much, much, much more talented teams. And Valanciunas against, this is a game that Valanciunas is obviously getting up for. And so I don't know how that ends up playing out because Embiid is the much better player. And Blake, this is one where, you know, you're going to give me the Garrett Temple statistic. And this is probably one, Ailish, where,
he was
like,
good last night.
I know, but this is probably one where numerically, if there's no Brandon Ingram and you're on a back-to-back, this makes a lot of sense. And those injuries, other than Seth Curry, they don't really matter that much to me. Like, I don't care about missing Shake Milton or Danny Green. I don't think those guys affect the line.
It's just a lot of – that's four guards stacked on top of each other.
I just – those two guys, I'm just saying, they don't really affect the line to me versus their replacement-level players. Seth Curry does. Seth Curry moves it a bit for me. I'm just saying that the Pelicans, it's just – for me – personally, from the vibe standpoint, I have to tell the vibes coordinator that, like – I am staying away from them. The Lakers won too. Like, I can't lay points with the Lakers.
Okay, Anthony Davis might be back.
I know, but it's the Lakers. The Lakers giving up points is just, God, they're so bad. They're so bad. I don't know who the analyst was that I saw yesterday, but they picked them not to make the playoffs. And I thought, this is a possibility. Like, that's actually out there. That's not an impossible thing for me, although Davis is probably going to change things quite a bit. I just, they're so terrible. Everybody around LeBron is terrible.
No KD, Irving, Joe Harris, Paul Millsap on the Brooklyn side of that as well, in addition to Anthony
Joe Harris
Davis
isn't even on
back.
That team anymore. Like, don't even
I know.
He's been hurt all year. Like,
but this is the thing, though, is like it's some, and you said this about the Philly thing, too. It's not necessarily each individual absence. It's the stacking of absences where maybe you don't care about a ton of those 76ers guys, but then you look and Charlie Brown Jr. and Isaiah Joe are each playing 27 minutes, okay. And the team only takes 16 threes in a game, and they barely get by the Spurs. So
can I counter this to the two of you, though?
Of course.
James Harden with a bunch of bums is James Harden's, like, that's what he loves more than anything. Like, James Harden's ability to beat the Lakers. This is it. This is like this is James Harden in his natural element, is playing with a bunch of guys that he doesn't have to pass to, that he just gets to go full James Harden tonight. I would say that if there's anything I'd be doing is, what's James Harden's point total tonight?
Keep going with your analysis while I find it.
I'm taking James Harden over on points. Like, I'm blind betting it. I bet you it's 28 like 26. Yeah, okay. I was going to say, oof, that's even a little bit higher. He's going to have a 30-piece tonight against the Lakers. He is. He's going to have a 30-piece. He's facing Russell Westbrook, right? So that's going to be incentive. He's facing the Lakers. Incentive. There's no other player on that team playing tonight. Incentive. This is a James Harden night. If he doesn't score 30 points, then you know what? Everyone was right. Russell Westbrook was the MVP that year, James. All right? Go out there and get a 30-piece. This is a good spot to bet James Harden, I think. This is his spot. This is a James Harden game. Bet James Harden triple-double tonight.
Ooh, triple-double could be spicy.
Yeah, triple-double.
James Harden, by the way, when KD and Irving aren't on the floor this year, he's played 493 minutes, 34% usage rate.
Yes, that's quite a usage rate. That's quite a usage rate. That's what I'm saying. This is a James Harden game. So I actually don't mind the Lakers here, Ailish. I don't mind that as a pick, especially money line, because you could probably get that in.
Like, that's what I'm going to go for, I think.
They should be able to overwhelm them from just LeBron. If AD comes back, they'll get a little bit of juice there. Mm-hmm. They're a better team than James Harden and a bunch of Nets bums, other than Blake and I's guy, Big Cass. But, are they better? Sure. The Lakers have lost to some really poor teams this year, and they've lost in a couple of spots where I'm like, you need a win tonight, and they still haven't done it. They're low on my trust team. I'm gonna stay NBA, too. I'm taking the Nuggets, and I'll lay the points against the Pistons. They just played the Pistons, and I think they beat them by 5. So the spread tonight, they beat them by 6. Tonight, the spread is 6.5. It feels like the books were just like, we're going to take the exact margin of victory, and we're going to make this the line tonight. Except for, I think it's kind of flukish that the Pistons ended up that close. If you look at what the Pistons got production-wise from guys down the lineup all over the place, like, it was a very complete game from them where they got a lot of different contributors. I'm just going to bet against that. I'm going to bet on a Nuggets team that I think is just far more talented, that has the best player, a couple of other better players. I'll just take the Nuggets to have at least, if you're going to tell me that they're going to play the Pistons twice, then I'm going to say they're going to blow them out one of those times. So I'll take them here. I think that the better team has an advantage in the second game when they're this close together. I have nothing to back that up other than logic, which is you should be able to learn more than they do. I just think the Nuggets will kick the crap out of them tonight. So I'll lay the 6.5 points.
Makes sense to me. No Jeremy Grant, no Kelly Olynyk on the Pistons side. Let's shake it up. Let's get a little versatile here. Actually, you know what? You want to just stick on NBA? I have an NBA and an NHL, but
don't overthink it, Blake. Just give us your best
go,
pick,
Blake.
Right? Like, you've been, ever since you got hot, you know, you're now giving
don't
us the
second
whole, like,
guess
I don't
yourself.
Know me. You used to be Mr. Money in the Bank. Like, did I just take Denver from you? Is this what happened here?
No.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I'm going to do,
like, my wrestling thing, Money in the Bank. Like, that was all for you.
Yeah. I'm going to go Mavericks +3 against the Golden State Warriors. Okay. No Draymond. No Iguodala. Yes. Clay's questionable, but the way Clay's fit in so far, like he we need to give him 10-12 games to get back. Dallas is almost fully healthy. Warriors are getting killed against the spread because the public money hasn't caught up to them being a little shakier with Draymond out. So what? One thing actually to watch here is, so Dallas's success has been predicated largely on their defense. They've won 11 of their last 13, and that includes a streak of 8 consecutive unders. The over-unders at 210.5 tonight. I might touch that a little later when we see if Clay's in or not. But Golden State has been sneaky struggling on offense. They've scored under 100 points in 7 of their last 12, and that's with Steph playing 10 of those 12 games. That includes they put up only 82 against the Mavs with a much healthier version of this Golden State Warriors team just a couple weeks ago. So a lot of indicators pointing in Dallas's direction here in terms of recent performance, how their defense matches up, what the Warriors' injury slate looks like. I just think the Warriors still a little bit overvalued with Draymond out because he's so central to what that team does. And Dallas's defense has reached another level. Don't like taking a road team in San Francisco necessarily, but Dallas is really good. They've found it. They're clicking. Again, 11-2 in their last 13 with some pretty quality wins in there.
I don't want to... I like when we're aligned.
Uh-oh.
My second pick, had one of you taken the Nuggets, was Mavericks money line. Just saying that I actually like the Mavericks to win outright tonight, so I can happily get behind a parlay where
that's
I get
good.
Points.
We like it. We like it.
Yeah, plus 130 on the money line. I need the security of those couple points just after coming off a loss. I want the 3 points.
Hey,
I want the three extra points.
You don't have to say anything to the guy who has a coward's parlay and does the most cowardly sports betting there is. And oftentimes, like, I did pick the Rams last weekend and I bet them pretty heavily, and that was great. So that ends up hitting, right? But I was so confident in them, and still for the coward's parlay, I ensured that one of them was a 7.5 plus bet, right? When I had it at 4.5 all week, where I was like, they're really not going to lose by 4.5. I liked the same thing, Niners. It's like Niners. Don't tease the Niners past 7.5. Put it at 10.5. You know, like, you don't have to explain to me. If there's any person that will never judge somebody for playing the safe side of a bet, it is this guy right here. You just have to put it with another thing. That's all.
What was your NHL bet? I'm just curious, Blake.
The best value on the board I show tonight is the Carolina Hurricanes. I got them at minus 175 earlier. That line should be closer to minus 200. It's a night where there are a couple moderate favorites that show a little bit of value. So it's one of those ones where, like, a couple of the lines felt cheaty for the waking rate because they're right around that minus 200.
Now it's 185 already.
Yeah, so it's moved a little bit. The Islanders crossed the minus 200 threshold, but that one shows a little bit of value as well. If Thatcher Demko doesn't play, the Oilers in the late game are interesting, but I would want to wait and find out who's in net for the Canucks, because I think at this point the Canucks are pulling, like, I don't know, the UBC goalie or something.
It's Mikey DiPietro.
DiPietro the other night, but they played tough in front of him. I think that, you know, they actually... That happens sometimes, and I will say this. This is one of old JD's gambling tenets that probably has failed him a billion times, but I did bet the under in that Canucks game because of that principle, which is they're not – if there's a crappy goalie in net, the team is going to know that they can't give up a ton of shots. The problem with the theory is if that goalie gives in a couple of bad goals early, you don't see that actually sustained throughout the entire game. So you got to have it early. But that is that is actually usually a spot where I zag. When the conventional wisdom is make sure you take the over because some scrubby goalie is in net, I usually go the other way where I say, no, there's probably good value on the under. They're giving too much credit for the difference in the goaltenders, and I'll bet the under with the fact that the team is playing more defense and playing a tighter game, and then conversely not creating as much offense for themselves, right? Like not taking as many risks. So that is usually a spot. I'm just saying something to monitor tonight if it is DiPietro again.
My counter to that would be you don't need
this isn't the team.
Many good shifts of McDavid and Draisaitl
against
the replacement goalie to
It's the opponent. I'm not. Here's what I'll tell you that I've never done this year, and I will never do this year: is bet an under in an Oilers game. Not going to happen. Between their goaltending and their offensive firepower, no chance, no way.
So a few NHL potential plays there, but nothing strong enough to make the wake and rake. Your wake and rake is Denver Nuggets -6.5, Lakers on the money line, Dallas Mavericks +3.